Welcome to the Pilot Podcast,
where we watch the pilot episodes of TV shows to answer your question, should I watch this?
My name is BJ.
And my name is Me Too.
And this week, we're checking out Big Sky on ABC, I Hate Susie on HBO Max, Animaniacs on Hulu, and The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City on Bravo.
So stay tuned to the end to find out if BJ and I are going to do a Real Housewives of where we live.
Well, I'm not a housewife.
Neither am I, but you don't have to be. None of them are married on Real Housewives of Atlanta. And I feel not many of them are married on New York.
Should I be a woman, though?
It's time we move past that.
Oh, we're breaking ground.
We're breaking ground.
First cast with a man who is not even married.
Real Housewives Hive, we all know that Dwight should have had a peach on Real Housewives of Atlanta.
I feel like that was something really deep that went over my head. So how about we just head into the first show? I think we should head to Montana first.
Beej, I think you're talking about Big Sky on ABC. And this show centers on private detectives Cassie, played by Kylie Bunbury, and Cody, played by the very, very attractive Ryan Phillippe, who still got it, Ryan Calmy, who team up with Cody's estranged wife, who thought they were reconciling, Jenny, played by Katherine Winnick, to search for two sisters who were kidnapped by a truck driver in Montana. As they investigate, they learn even more lives might be at stake and that they are racing against the clock to save them.
Ooh, suspense. But before we dive into the kidnapping, I think we need to address the Cassie, Cody, Jenny love triangle.
Yes, the mess of it all, centering around Cody.
Yes, Cody is separated from Jenny, and they have a child together, a son. And Cody works with Cassie, and Cassie is friends with Jenny. And someone, we still don't know who, said that Jenny and Cody were over completely.
Well, Cody said it to Cassie.
And Cassie claims that Jenny said it to her as well.
All I know is it was sad to see Cassie and Jenny fighting when they are clearly two bosses and fighting over Cody. And I get it. It's Ryan Phillippe. Would I fight for him if I knew I had a chance?
Would you bust your lip for him?
Now we're talking about fisticuffs. I'm not sure, but Ryan Phillippe has been fine for so long. So I get why these two women in this small town in Montana are fighting over this gentleman. But it was sad to see them fighting when clearly he shared mixed messages with each of them. Because Jenny thought that they were on a path to reconciliation. And Cassie, while she shouldn't have slept with him, wasn't the one who was married to Jenny. And what she heard from him and potentially from Jenny as well is that this marriage was over.
Yeah. And like you said, Cody is the one who's making this so frustrating because he is trying to pursue something with both women. He's trying to have it all.
And you can't. You can't have it all. So something about cakes and eating them too, you just can't do it. And now let's get to the other crime, aside from Cody's gaslighting, and it is actual kidnapping and torture of people by a mysterious truck driver. How did you feel about what I think will be a case of the week / overarching case situation of this show?
I thought it was done really well. You get the strong, creepy vibes. You get the suspense. You are scared for these young women who are also, before I even get to that, the truck was empty. Is this guy pretending to be a trucker?
I think it has to do with, as they investigate these crimes, they learn that there is this cult that might be taking over this town next to theirs. And that might be part of the reason why these two college girls on a road trip were kidnapped, as well as this woman who is a sex worker was kidnapped. Well, they don't know about the sex worker yet, but they think this
surprise,
cult,
there's more.
Yes. They think that this cult has something to do with it. And maybe this is him making deliveries for the cult. Maybe they are what goes in the truck.
So he really is a truck driver, but instead of shipping the latest iPhones or food, he's shipping kidnapped women. It makes sense. Very creepy.
And it was creepy. His relationship with his mom was creepy. That's often used to explain the bad behavior of men, is like bad parenting. And he had, I think the mom is probably in the cult. I just got a really weird vibe from her. And I'm not sure yet about the state trooper that they interact with, but he called his wife mother, and that sent a chill down the spine.
Yeah, you didn't like that. And his relationship with his wife definitely seems off.
There's a state trooper that they'll have to coordinate with who is familiar with the town. And so he, Rick, played by John Carroll Lynch. And Rick calls his wife mother, and I stopped trusting him right at that point.
Mm-hmm. And Rick is brought in by Cody because we find out that their son is waiting for his girlfriend, Danielle, played by Natalie Lind, and her sister, Grace, played by Jade Pettyjohn, to arrive in town. But they don't arrive, and they're not responding to any texts or calls. So Cody takes it upon himself to go searching for them and calls on the local state trooper to provide assistance.
Because that's the kind of hero Ryan Phillippe is.
Just another, another charming aspects of his.
Honestly, it's silly that he would investigate it alone and not bring one of the two very armed, capable investigators in his life, because his maybe soon-to-be ex-wife is a retired police officer, and then his business partner is also a private detective.
I thought it was strange that he told Cassie to like stay put at their home base.
That was odd.
Yeah. And it just led to a moment for Cassie and Jenny to butt heads again.
So do you want to watch more episodes of this show where we might find out if Jenny and Cassie make up after Cody's gaslighting? Do we find this truck driver, track him down, save these women? Do we have even more cases of the week that might be coming? Does Rick stop calling his wife mother? There's so much to look forward to.
I think you know the answer to one of those questions. I would watch again seriously. I thought that this was really compelling, and I was expecting Case of the Week, but they really presented this as this ongoing kidnapping scheme, and then the hints of a cult that might be behind all of this. It feels like it's really starting to grow into a mystery I want to find out more about. And to be honest, I want to know if Danielle and Grace are going to be okay. The actresses did a really good job with that sister relationship, and I'm just kind of praying that they survive this. How do you feel?
I, too, pray that they survive this, especially because Grace did everything in her power to try to get them to safety, and I just want Grace's smart actions and choices to lead to safety. I will also watch more episodes of this show. It was, we didn't mention, created by David Kelly, who also created Chicago Hope, Ally McBeal, The Practice, Boston Public, Big Little Lies, just a ton of fun, juicy shows that some are more highly reviewed than others, but all are fun to watch and consume. And this will definitely be one that you'll sit down every week to take in all of this mess. All right, Beej, speaking of mess, let's take things from one countryside to another with HBO Max's I Hate Susie.
Sure. So now we're going to head over for a British drama across the pond. This one is following Susie Pickles, played by Billie Piper. She is an actress whose life has been thrown into turmoil when her phone is hacked. And now some very compromising photos have been leaked onto the internet, and it's going to affect not only her professional career, but also her family life. We also meet her friend and agent, Naomi, played by Layla Farzad, and her husband, Cobb, played by Daniel Ings. So, Meetu, how did you feel about seeing this child star, now grown up, trying to keep everything together, and having something so personal and private leaked to the world?
So, first, this show was co-created by the star of it, Billie Piper. And this person sort of mirrors her career, where she started on a singing competition, was destined for stardom, and did a couple super nerdy shows like being Rose on Doctor Who, and has a very dedicated fandom from that route, which is like what we see with Susie. And while I don't know if Billie Piper has had a leak, I can imagine a photo leak or hacking. I can imagine how vulnerable it must feel to have had your life up for public consumption. And this is such a violent next step for that. And so it's interesting that they're trying to find the humor in this storyline, because that is such a violation. I think Paris Hilton, in her YouTube documentary, said that having those tapes of her leak felt like sexual assault. And I can imagine why.
Yeah, it's very traumatizing. You can see throughout this episode the stress on her face just from looking at people around her wondering, do they know yet? What are they thinking? Are they judging me? And while there is never an ideal time to have your nudes leaked, this is even worse because she is up for a role as a Disney princess. And we all know that Disney is a very family-friendly company. So this is probably going to affect her next gig.
And in the show, she says something like, bye-bye, television. So she's really looking to make it to the next step. And this will affect that. We've seen people lose Disney deals for less. So speaking of having this happen at the worst time with this Disney deal, she also has this photo shoot taking place at her home. And you see that she is so eager to please everyone in her life. She is unplugging the router in hopes that she can protect her husband from it. She is making everyone in the photo shoot tea, and she is still going through with the photo shoot, even though I think many other people would have just canceled it. So it's interesting to see the lengths to which she will go to please others, which might also be another function of having grown up for public consumption since you were so young.
Yeah, she's always on display. I'm sure she's always expecting criticism, so she's trying to get that positive response out of the people around her. And she has this huge team from Esquire magazine for the photo shoot, who I think weren't that respectful when they kind of barged into her home. But it was really sad to see her trying to make everyone happy, not only on the set, but she sees how much her husband is struggling with this once he finds out what's going on. And you have to watch her try to make the photographer happy, try to make the stylist happy, but also every now and then looking across the room to see how her husband is reacting to the news on his phone. And it's just overwhelming. The anxiety that she was experiencing, I'm sure, is like, whew, too much.
And like you said, they do these close-up shots of her face constantly, and you see so much playing out just beneath the surface. And it's a testament to her acting that she delivers so much in each of these shots that convey panic and shock. And the episode title is even called Shock, and they're titled after the stages of depression. So the next one is Denial. And so we are witnessing her experience the stages of grief. And so we are witnessing her undergo a trauma and still powering forward.
Literally powering through to the end. Honestly, I was surprised that the photographer was happy with the shots, because her face looked like she was grieving, like she was in pain. But apparently that works for modeling and magazine shoots.
How do you see this leak affecting her career, her family? What do you think is coming next for Susie?
So career-wise, I think Disney is over. She won't be a Disney princess. I do appreciate that her friend and agent, Naomi, seems to be really supportive and like ready to stand by her through this. Because we see her husband is still trying to process this and they're not able to have the conversation they need to yet to see what the next steps could be.
That's true. It's tough because you get why the husband is freaking out and you get why she is freaking out. So you want him to comfort her, but then in other moments you're like, oh, I wish she would comfort him better. But really, it's two people undergoing trauma at the same time. So how are they supposed to take a moment and be like, hey, how are you doing? Let's check in. Like,
how does this make you feel?
Like, sis, I am being violated across the internet. I do not have time to hold your hand right now.
So you're going to help me carry the tea to the people?
Yeah.
We're going to get the furniture off the lawn together?
So do you want to watch more episodes of I Hate Susie?
I would watch this again casually. This is only an 8-episode series, and, you know, it's kind of stressful to watch because I feel like the actress, Billie Piper, is really portraying these emotions really well. So I would want to take my time getting through it, but I do want to see how Susie's story plays out and what happens with her family and her career, and maybe she really can bounce back and be a Disney princess.
Maybe, Beach. I agree. I would watch again casually. I tried to watch the very next episode because this show was so good, but I felt so stressed and I was like, I just need to take a break and then come back to it. If you like Fleabag or Catastrophe or these other shows that are British and humorous and feature a woman in distress making maybe not the best choices due to that distress, then you will also really enjoy I Hate Susie.
Agreed. So how about we go from something stressful to something zany and wacky with an animated series?
I think you're talking about Animaniacs on Hulu. And 22 years later, Yakko, played by Rob Paulsen, Wacko, played by Jess Harnell, and Dot, played by Tress MacNeille, are back to bring chaos to the Warner Brothers lot. In this first episode, they catch up with everything that's happened since they've gone away and even link up with Pinky, also voiced by Rob Paulsen, and The Brain, voiced by Maurice LaMarche, who are putting a modern spin on world domination.
So, Mitu, the episode title is Suspended Animation, which I think is very appropriate because they open up being very open about their coming back to TV. How did you feel about them talking about themselves being a show coming back to TV?
It was very meta like that, where they just kept making jokes about reboots. And they even had a song that one of the lines in the song is, if you want to make some easy cash, just recycle and rehash. So they're hitting the nail on the head. It even opens, the cold open is the Jurassic Park people. So it's the characters, it's the voice actors of Yakko, Wacko, and Dot playing, you know, Laura Dern and Jeff Goldblum and the Jurassic Park crew happening upon the Animaniacs. And then Steven Spielberg, who executive produces this reboot, saying, okay, we'll bring them back. And Jurassic Park was also brought back as Jurassic World. So there, it's just so self-referential that they're doing that on all these layers. And I thought that was fun. I thought that they ran the joke into the ground a little bit. Like, I think they were making too much fun of themselves and I wanted something fresh. But I guess if I wanted something fresh, this wasn't the one to do it because they're telling us exactly what we were supposed to get in the opening song.
Exactly. It's very clear what it is, what they're trying to do. And I like that because the Animaniacs, Yakko, Wacko, and Dot are the Warner siblings, even though they call themselves the Warner Brothers.
And sister.
That's
what they always do. And sister.
We get to see them use WB property. So we see the Jurassic Park references. We see Batman, Harry Potter, Wonder Woman all make these cameos. And so they're not only commenting on reboots, but they're also being like, look, we are Warner. we're trying to show you all the properties you like, including Animaniacs.
So then it just begs the question of, I liked the original run of Animaniacs. Do I want it again? How did you feel about them bringing it back?
To be honest, when I saw that this was coming back, I kind of wondered why. I remember watching this as a child in the 90s and liking it, but it also wasn't a show where I said, I want more episodes.
They did mention That's So Raven in the show as one people wanted back. And I wanted to be like, BJ and I was thinking, BJ and I reviewed that, and Raven's Home was actually fire. It was so good. It worked.
And they commented on Fuller House being back, which is getting good ratings. So people do like that nostalgia. And I'm not saying Animaniacs doesn't deserve that chance. It's just not a show that would come to my mind of what should we bring back.
You know what I did really enjoy, though, was the Pinky and the Brain sketch.
Yeah, that is still as good as I remember it being.
I read a review of the show, and I guess people didn't really like Pinky and the Brain when they tried to do their own show outside of having the mini shorts within Animaniacs, but I thought this short was so good. It was so funny. It was Pinky and the Brain determined to rule the world, and they do it through inventing memes and this filter that employs mind control, the classic circular image spinning like circle spiral, that the classic spinning spiral that Brain always uses to try to hypnotize people. And it was just funny to see them use a meme for that and do that modern spin. And I thought it was funny that within the show that felt like the best take on bringing the 90s comedy of Pinky and Brain trying to take over the world. So having that still be the base of the show, but then modernizing the storyline.
Yeah, I think they translated well to a modern storyline. Although, once again, the thought that first came into my head was, are we still going to laugh at the fact that Pinky is a literal insane character? That Pinky and the Brain are literally victims of lab experiments, and that Brain is literally an abusive friend?
They lay that out. They say that Pinky goes, while we've been away, I've been learning, and after 22 years, I've learned that we're codependent and you are abusive, and that's what keeps us together. And Brain just hits him, and Pinky is like, oh, I deserved that. Like, let's get into this. And I definitely felt uncomfortable. It's like, oh, I don't know.
It's like, why'd you have to say it out loud?
Yeah, why'd you have to say it out loud? That's the theme of this country. Why'd you have to say it out loud?
So we'll gloss over how we feel about that. So you didn't answer the question you asked me. Did this need to come back? How do you feel about that?
I don't know that I was necessarily excited for Animaniacs to come back. I think you and I are a little bit younger than the true Animaniacs fandom, because I don't completely remember it. I remember watching it when I was a kid. I think after it went off air, it was still airing, and that's how I saw it. But I don't remember being obsessed with it. Like you said, I don't remember wanting more episodes, but I do know that that fandom is there and it's strong. So while I don't think it needed to be brought back for me, I do think we're entitled to, especially in the middle of a panty, which is what someone called the pandemic and I'm obsessed with. Ryan Ken called it a panty. In the middle of a panty, everyone is entitled to whatever joy you can get. And so if Animaniacs coming back is your source of joy, dope. I'm glad it's back.
That's very nice of you. Very giving. So me too. What would you rate Animaniacs on Hulu?
I would rate Would Watch Again casually. I thought it was fun and bright, and I'm not opposed to watching more episodes. I just don't think I'm necessarily the target audience for it, but I enjoyed it.
Okay. I would probably watch while doing laundry, just have something funny on in the background, mostly just focused on the Pinky and Brain segments.
True. That was maybe the reason I was most interested in watching more episodes. It was so good. All right, from chaos to chaos, first in the animated world and now out west in the mountains, beach. Tell us about Real Housewives of Salt Lake City on Bravo.
Sure. So people are familiar with the Real Housewives franchise. They found a new city with a new cast of women to follow. We're in Salt Lake City. What's special about Salt Lake City? The Mormon church is ingrained in that culture. And so we're going to meet women who are Mormon, but you know what? Bravo is diverse. So we're also meeting women who are ingrained in Islam, who are Jewish, and also Pentecostal.
Mm-hmm. And one woman isn't that religious.
And there you go. One woman who's not even really believing in anything. So while we dive into Salt Lake City with all of this religious beliefs, we're going to learn more about what it means to be part of Salt Lake City society. Who are the elite? What are these relationships about? What are the high standards that they set for them? Which woman has the most tequila brands? These are the things we need to know. And this whole show is based around the housewives, whether or not they are a housewife. But in this case, everyone is married, correct? Oh, no, there's one divorced woman. So how about we just break it down cast member by cast member, and we can also kind of bring up what storylines they had in this first episode.
Excellent. Let's start with Jen. She converted.
One of my favorites.
Jen Shaw is a star. She converted from the LDS church after meeting and marrying her husband, who is a coach, and he's Black. And she has two sons with him who are Black. And basically, the only reason I bring that up is she says that she left the church because she learned that Black people were not allowed in until 1978, I believe. So she converted to her husband's religion, Islam, in order to have a unified home, but also be in a religion that she felt was more inclusive.
And what's also interesting about her is that her background is Tongan and Hawaiian, but she said people in Salt Lake City just kind of lump her in with Black people.
Yes, I think so. Often people will use people of color as a broad term when they usually mean Black. In this case, I think it's almost the reverse, where people of color really should be like a bunch of different people who are all of color, but they're all just being lumped as Black.
Yeah, Black or white. Those are your options.
Mm-hmm. And Jen is going to go with Black.
Yeah. But you know what? With that much money, she can deal with it. She is wealthy from her marketing companies, and she uses that to throw lavish parties, to get all of the cosmetic treatments you could ever think of, and then some you probably didn't even know were a thing. And I feel like she's living her best life. You commented on how awesome it is that she has her own team of personal assistants always cheering her on by her side, her family.
She has like 5 to 6 personal assistants, and it's not 100% clear what they each do for her, but she mentions that they're sort of like the people who keep her company because her husband is gone so much with coaching. But speaking of her cosmetic procedures, she gets them done at Heather's studio. You want to talk about Heather?
Yeah, so Heather is our only non-married member. She's actually divorced. She is a member of the LDS church.
And she describes herself as a purebred. So her ancestors were pioneers. And she says, just as they were brave discovering new lands, she would be brave. BJ, why are you laughing?
She would be
brave discovering her life post-divorce.
I like her attitude. I think she clearly got married young, right out of BYU, and she has her kids, and now she's on her own. But she's very positive, upbeat. She has her own successful med spa business, doing all of these latest cosmetic procedures. And I was actually surprised to see that she seems more open and outgoing, even with her kids, and is drinking and is trying to have a good time.
I think the divorce helped to liberate her a little bit. She talks about being married so young, being such a quote unquote good girl, never letting her hair down. And so because she was shamed a bit, she believes, by her community for getting a divorce, which is unheard of, it allowed her to spread her wings.
Yeah, which is similar to her cousin, Whitney Rose, who also has a interesting marriage timeline. You want to break that down?
Oh, okay. So the internet tells me Whitney is 34. 10 years ago when she was 24, she was already married, potentially with a child, and she met her boss, who was 18 years older, aka a 42-year-old. And so she and this boss, you know, you called me that meme of the lady with all the numbers in front of her head looking confused, but look at the confidence speech. Look at the material. So she and this boss had a torrid affair that shocked the community, caused her family to shun her. He left his wife, she left her husband, and they've been married for 10 years. And in this first episode, we see her vow renewal, where they redeclare their love in front of their family. You see some of her family apologize to her because they've been together for so long now and are sort of an established couple. But you get the sense that she is no longer religious, but also no longer following the customs of the church. There's a lot of drinking at the vow renewal. She jumps on a pole. She starts pole dancing. And she is clearly a butterfly. She has spread her wings.
Definitely. She is freer, lighter, happier. And you really do see, compared to the other women, that she is younger. Like, it comes across in her behavior and personality. And we're introduced to Mary, who is older, and you
married
can kind
to her
of,
grandpa.
Okay, let's just go right into it.
We have to.
So
married
Mary
to her grandpa
is the Pentecostal cast member. She is the first lady at her church, and her husband is her step-grandfather.
So Beach, explain their child, which we talked about for 6 whole minutes before we started recording, trying to understand how their child is related to each of them.
So Mary and her husband have a teenage son, and kind of break down things. We know that Mary has, about a 20-year difference between her and her husband?
Yes.
And also, her husband had about a 20-year difference between him and Mary's grandmother.
Yes. His wife. His first wife.
Yes, late mm-hmm. wife. And also, they got married because that was what Mary's grandmother willed for them.
She wanted someone in the family to marry her husband to take care of him.
One of her daughters, one of her girls, to take care of her husband. And Mary was the one. And so they have a child who is Mary's son. But if you look at a family tree, due to their son's father, his father is also his great-grandfather, because Mary's husband is also her grandfather. And so Mary's son is also her uncle. And she is not only his mother, but also
his great.
It would be
he's her uncle, and she's his great grandma.
Yeah, she's his great grandma. Yeah.
He would
and
be her uncle.
He's her niece.
He's her nephew?
No, she's his niece.
Yeah, she's his niece. I want to throw up.
And the son's grandmother, Mary's mother, is his stepsister.
I want to die. Why did you say that last bit? You make me want to vomit. Oh my gosh.
Anyway,
I could not handle. As we say in the South, that tree don't fork. That family tree did not fork, and
it
my
just has
stomach
some loops
is
and
has
knots.
Never stopped somersaulting since I watched this.
It's a very unique tree, and Mary is a very interesting personality. She loves luxury goods. She's wearing designer runway outfits. She also seems pretty hesitant to drink, so she might be a little conservative in that area. And I guess we can just mention her plot line. She seems to only really be friends with Whitney right now. She and Jen used to be close, until Mary made a comment that Jin smells like hospital, because Jin had been going to the hospital a lot because her aunt had to get surgery. And Mary doesn't like the smell of hospitals because it reminds her of a dark time when she had to get surgery.
BJ, what was the surgery?
She said she had her odor glands removed. But
ten
she said
surgeries.
It was, she had a lot of complications. And she said she almost died twice. And so...
Y'all, we have to move on for time. But what I urge you to do is just Google pictures of Mary from before this exclusive odor gland removal. Google them pictures and tell me what she looks like now versus then.
Speaking of how people look, our next two housewives look very similar. They even comment that people say they look alike. We have Lisa Barlow and Meredith Marks, who are both long brown hair, similar kind of square jaw, similar nose, similar eyes, same lips, same cheeks, but different people. Do you have a preference of which one of these, the two side, which side of this coin do you want to discuss first?
Well, I think we can talk about them both at the same time. So Lisa is the one who runs a liquor company, Vita Tequila, and a couple other brands. She is the ticket to Sundance. And you have to, as Jen says, kiss the ring and be friends with her in order to get into Sundance things. Meredith also has a lot of connections with celebrities. She's a celebrity jeweler, so some of her famous clientele include Charlize Theron. And Lisa is, I believe, happily married.
She's married with kids, Mormon, went to BYU.
And not afraid to feed them fast food, or they had a funny scene where they all went through like the Taco Bell, Sonic, and Chick-fil-A drive-thrus.
She ordered Baja Blast from Taco Bell. That's when I knew, Lisa, you're cool. You're in your luxury car telling your kids, don't drop those cookies on the seat.
She told her baby, don't wipe your chicken fingers on the leather.
Also, those are the same cookies I bought us, those crumble ones.
Yes, I noticed that. Delicious. Delicious. And then Meredith, conversely, she is Jewish, so she is not a member of the LDS Church. She and her husband are rocky, I would say. He is in Chicago a lot for work, and they seem to be living very separate lives. And her son, Brooks, who is home from college for the semester, and he seems to be all the companion that she needs.
Or has.
Or has, yes.
Although I thought it was interesting with Meredith, I believe she is from Chicago, or at least they spent a lot of time in Chicago before moving to Salt Lake City. But I don't understand why she stayed in Salt Lake City if her husband works in Chicago so much.
She said she couldn't move her business.
Ah.
So they're
her
both at a
business.
Mm-hmm. So they're both at an impasse. And in this first episode, another conflict is that it's Meredith's birthday. Her son had to set up those romantic roses for her that the father oversaw through FaceTime, which was also
he paid for. Yeah.
And then even though it's her birthday, Jen threw it at her home and it was a Shaw party. It had nothing to do with Meredith.
We said it was Meredith's birthday. Isn't that enough?
I think that was enough. I mean, Jen had Tonga dancers. The step and repeat said Shaw Chalet, and she made a surprise entrance. So Meredith is like just walking around her party chilling, and Jen makes the big mid-party reveal of her dress and makeup and the whole thing.
To celebrate Meredith, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Just like a good friend would. So,
and just like Jen didn't tell her good friend that it's not my birthday.
Exactly. Yes, Jen's really good friend walked into Jen's room as she was getting ready for her big reveal and brings her a gift because it, obviously everything in that evening indicates that this is Jen's party. And Jen, I think because she's on camera and so few people are in the room, had to go, oh, it's not my birthday.
Yeah, she's like, my birthday was a few months ago. This is Meredith's birthday. Obviously.
So, Beach, do you want to watch more episodes of this show?
You know, I never figured myself to be a Housewives fan. I know it's a very popular franchise for Bravo. There's one that's even here local to us in the DC metropolitan area. And I think I would watch some episodes casually. These women are crazy. Jen is over the top. Meredith and Lisa are the same person. Whitney is a wild child. Mary is hiding
married
something.
To her grandfather. And allegedly runs a cult.
And Heather is just having the best time of her life post-divorce. So I would see what else they're up to. Tell the listeners what you did after you watched the pilot.
I feel like you're airing me out. Listeners, usually we try to only watch one episode of the show so we could do a good review and do it on explicitly the pilot. But I couldn't help myself and I watched all three. So
All that's available. So she had to stop.
Yeah. Okay, yes. I am completely caught up. It's so good. I would recommend it. Whether you are Real Housewives Hive or not, I personally only really watch Potomac. BJ doesn't really like them. You can see how much he's fallen in love. This show is incredible. It has injected a new life into the Real Housewives franchise. This is one of the first times in a long time that we are meeting an entirely new cast. And I would argue it is the strongest debut we've seen from a Real Housewives.
Wow. And this is coming from an expert who's seen multiple series.
Well, I really just watch Atlanta and Potomac. Really,
you
Potomac.
You said something about
I
New
stopped
York.
Atlanta. I'm just familiar with the ladies of New York. I don't really. I watched the very first season of New York, and then I fell off.
But this captivated you immediately.
Yes, immediately.
Interesting. Okay. Well, listeners, we don't have more reviews of The Real Housewives, but we review other shows which you'll probably enjoy. So check out those reviews on our website at thepilotpodcast.com and be sure to subscribe to us on all of your favorite podcast platforms.
You can follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at The Pilot Pod, and you can send thoughts, feelings, show recommendations, any tips on any of the ladies, especially Mary, to askthepilotpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Bye.